Coming to you live from Sports Illustrated Auxiliary Basement Studio 6C. That's right, they kicked the Weekside podcast out of the studio. Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr here after week 12. A lot to get to before Thanksgiving. Hopefully we can be part of your drive home for the holidays. Jenny, I think it's obvious where we start. I mean, this Monday night football game, Lamar Jackson throws another 5 touchdowns, looks absolutely incredible, seems to be running away with the MVP race. Before we get into a little bit about what we think about him going forward and kind of what this really means from a larger perspective, this is incredible, right? I mean, we haven't seen anything quite like this in a while.
Yeah, it's the fun phenomenon of the season. Obviously, last year the focus was on Patrick Mahomes, and this year it's Lamar Jackson being a revelation. And it seems like every week he tops the performance the week before, and those who are doubting the MVP race early in the season, we know we have some listeners who are doubting him in the MVP race.
That's right. We got receipts. I was thinking about like a way to come at this today, that because what more can we say about it right now? I mean, they caught the NFL, rest of the NFL, with their pants down. They came up with an offense that was that works with against a lot of defenses at the right time. They have a great quarterback with a lot of different skill sets, good offensive line. Everything is working, I think, right now. But I think one of the most interesting things, the biggest compliment that can be paid to Lamar Jackson, what the rest of the league thinks about him, is how this filters out over time, right? And I think that if you look at it, you know, Greg Roman's going to get a head coaching job out of this, probably the Ravens offensive coordinator, or at least will be heavily in the mix for a head coaching job, I would say. You know, there's going to be teams bringing in a lot of the same consultants that the Ravens brought in last season, like Paul Johnson from Georgia Tech, to teach them some of these option blocking concepts. Maybe teams might even start adopting a little bit of the way that John Harbaugh treats fourth downs and some of the more interesting analytical decisions. And I think all of that can be viewed through the lens of like, that's a compliment to Lamar because he's driving this whole ship forward.
Absolutely. But I do think it would be a mistake to think that other teams could replicate it.
Exactly.
Because they will not be able to have the same details in doing so, right? First of all, you don't have the same quarterback. Second of all, you don't have the same coaching staff. So I think the Ravens are a very smart team. I mean, a lot of the credit here goes to Harbaugh, who saw that Lamar was the future for his franchise, and you know, all these other teams pass on him and they get him at the end of the first round, and he's the best quarterback in that class, and also beyond. But
yeah,
I mean, just specifically looking at that. But I think in order to be smart about how you construct a new offense, you have to be a confident veteran coach like Harbaugh.
Wouldn't it be great if teams took the actual lesson here, right, which is to empower smart people and give them the leeway to try new things and try things that are maybe outside of the norm instead of this perpetual cycle that we're in, which is, you know, it's akin of, you know, looking at someone who's got a great garden and you just rip the plants out and you try to bury it in your own backyard and see if it grows. You know, it's just this constant, oh, this team's successful, let me steal that and replicate it here. This team's cool, let me steal that and replicate it here. It almost never works, right?
So often you don't have the infrastructure to make it work, and or the confidence or any number of things. And so we always see these copycat type, you know, approaches fade out.
We're down to the point where, because imagine if all the owners were thinking about things the way that Baltimore's is, New England certainly in that group as well, we could have 32 really interesting diverse offenses every Sunday that we could see. Like, if you play this out in this utopian scenario, and instead what we really have every week is, you know, we have the Patriots, we have the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan, who did something different. We have Andy Reid, and then we have the Ravens, and then we have, what, 28 other teams that are running some version of a Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay or Andy Reid offense. Like, you know, 28 other teams are just trying to copy basically what the best four or most innovative four teams are doing, which is such a backwards way of looking at this.
Yeah, and you even look with the Bears, right? Matt Nagy comes from Andy Reid's system. He was part of their think tank when they built this new system that would be designed for a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes when he came into the NFL. And then he goes into Chicago. You have a different quarterback, obviously, but you have a different coaching staff. You don't have Andy Reid, and things don't come out the same way.
You wonder why it is. Does people just want a microwaved version of success, or is it, you know, is it the way that the owners are looking at it, or why don't we have more success cases like this. And granted, you know, John Harbaugh won a Super Bowl early on in his career, so he has that sort of latitude to be able to experiment mm-hmm. in that cachet. But you wonder why more teams aren't following this blueprint, or, you know, might they if they see something like this happening this year?
I definitely think job security in the NFL stymies innovation, because the jobs churn so quickly and you may not get another chance and there are so few of them. That's one main contender, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I asked someone this the other day, like, do you think that Baltimore will change things in terms of anything? I mean, do you think anything will latch on outside of what we just talked about, just the people trying to steal the offense? And, you know, that question had a specific focus analytically, and a lot of coaches use analytical decision making. John Harbaugh talks about it a little bit more, so he's going to naturally get assigned more credit for it. But my ask was, you know, now that this is out there more than it has been before, is it going to change the way that other coaches do things? He said probably not, because at the end of the day, to be honest, maybe this affects one or two games a season, and owners don't think that way, right? They don't think in these little, you know, increments, 16-week increments of getting better that broadly. I think it's much bigger for them, and they oftentimes maybe miss the good stuff because of thinking that way.
Wow. That's a you know, quite a rallying cry there, Connor.
I just wanted somebody buy us a football team. If you and I owned a football team, we would have a Super Bowl within 5 years.
That's an oracle. You should have saved that one for the end of the show.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I know what's coming next because I have it written down in front of me. But speaking of the Ravens, we'll get into the news. They're 9-2, and they're hosting the 10-1 San Francisco 49ers this weekend in what some tastemakers are calling a Super Bowl preview. The most electric offense in the land and what some believe to be the most electric defense are on a collision course for our television screens. This is a big deal.
I mean, maybe, you know. It's, you know, it's just another game, Connor. One week at a time.
Yeah.
One of 256.
But you're looking forward to it.
Yes. I mean, it does. With both of these teams, the question has been, and we were rough on the 49ers last week on the pod, got called out a little bit on Twitter for that. Mm-hmm. Rightfully so. We thought that they were what was the word you used?
Paper tiger.
Paper tiger. Yeah. Yes. And I think we are proven wrong.
Yeah.
But whenever there is a hot new team, the question is always, you know, will they make it all the way to the Super Bowl and will we see them? But this is like a big matchup for our power rankings, Connor. This will cause seismic changes.
Seismic. It's going to be ridiculous, you know? From a schematic standpoint, I think it's interesting because it's an offense that's designed to trick you up front, right, and to confuse assignments. And then you have these four defensive linemen, these first-round picks, pass rushers, who are known for, like, surging towards upfield towards a quarterback. I don't know. I think that's going to be really fun to watch, to see the collision course between those two things in particular.
I just saw a quote from Eric Weddle with the Rams saying he didn't know where the ball was half the time.
And that's so cool.
And he came from Baltimore, so it's pretty amazing.
You wonder, like, you know, I don't know if this is a Super Bowl preview because I just have a hard time not putting the Patriots in there, you know, just from a mental perspective. But I don't know. I think this will show us a lot about these two teams. And I hate to keep putting this on the 49ers because they dismantled the Packers this past week. And that's a quality opponent. But for some reason, this makes it even more so for me, I guess.
Richard Sherman would not like that. What did he say? People keep saying that the 49ers are playing so-and-so, but what about so-and-so playing the 49ers?
Mm.
I think I have that in the right order there.
One of my proudest moments was, I think it was like 2016, where I wrote something that I said, you know, and in 6 weeks, Richard Sherman's going to be standing on a stool in the locker room and saying that nobody believed in us. And it literally happened like seven weeks later. And like a Seahawks website like blogged about it. And I was very happy about that because that's his deal, right? You know, is that this is all being framed wrong and you're never giving enough respect to my team, even though he played on a generationally great defense that probably got way too much respect for longer than they were due that respect. And now he's on a 49ers team that, who knows?
I mean, well, that's true. We're still talking about the Legion of Boom. How many dismantled units like that are we still talking about?
With one Super Bowl win.
Right.
The 85 Bears.
Yeah.
It would be those two, right?
Yeah.
You know?
85 Bears.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Richard's getting enough respect. We believe in...
But the 85 Bears is the whole team. Or right. the whole defense.
That's
I mean.
True. Yeah.
All right, moving on to the next topic. Speaking of rematches, the Browns, winners of three straight, head into Pittsburgh with a second wild card spot in the AFC, very much up for grabs. Mason Rudolph has been benched. Myles Garrett has been suspended. No funny business is expected. But then again, you can never totally count out funny business. Just really, really some great topics here this week, Connor. I'm Thank just you. Thinking you're really knocking these out of the park.
D Haslam, though, last week wearing a Myles Garrett hat onto the field before the Browns game, obviously showing a good deal of support for them. Freddie Kitchens continued to support him. John Dorsey sent out a message supporting him. I think that this game is going to be really interesting because both teams have sort of dug in on their respective sides, as you would expect two entrenched rivals. But this is in Pittsburgh. You know, there's a lot of bad blood there. And I saw recently on Twitter someone selling shirts now that say the Steelers started it. In like orange and brown, you know, and they're all going to be wearing them in the parking lot there. I've had some bad experiences in the Heinz Field parking lot, I'm sure.
That is a difficult place.
It is a difficult place to go. And I don't know. I think this game could be really interesting on and off the field.
On and off the field. Well, technically still on it.
Yeah.
After the whistle. Yes. Before and after the whistle.
Before and after the whistle. Yeah. In and out of the parking lot.
In and out of the parking lot. I think it will be hard to keep a lid on things. Mm-hmm. I just can't see things not breaking out again.
Yeah, I mean, to have what happened happen, you know, I think that the Steelers were never able to, and the Bengals were never able to separate after
right,
some of the stuff
exactly.
that happened with them.
Yeah.
And this is far more serious than anything that happened in any of those games. And you wonder, short distance in between the games, the feelings are still fresh. I mean, as a coach, I don't even know how you handle that going into it because yeah. there's probably the temptation to use that as motivation, but then your team could get so far off the reservation within minutes of this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Mike Tomlin would have more experience handling than Kitchens, who's in his first season and didn't do a great job handling it the first time.
Yeah. Where do you think, I mean, do you think the Browns are still in this? I mean, you look at their schedule moving forward. They've had a couple wins against some paper tigers, certainly, over the last few weeks,
really,
or just some
really
bad
like
teams,
word,
you know,
yeah.
just generally really bad teams. And they let the Dolphins back into that game. I mean, they were beating the Miami Dolphins pretty soundly, but let them score 17 points in a short period of time, kind of let them creep back into the game a little bit. I mean, is this just a top-heavy team that's able to kind of coast against bad opponents, or is it a team that maybe functionally can get themselves back together a little bit for the playoffs?
I don't like them as a playoff team, and I don't think their schedule is that easy. I mean, they've got the Ravens still.
Yeah.
The Cardinals are no pushover.
True.
In Arizona. I mean, yeah, the Bengals, they've got, that's what it is, right? They've got the Bengals twice, but mm-hmm. I just can't get on board with this Brown team. They're just one step forward, two steps back, too many things going on. But Gary Grambling was just hyping them up as a potential playoff pick.
Gary loves Gary, our editor, and Sunday night and Monday morning podcast host, among other jack of all trades, loves the Browns and loves the Jets. He's feeling both of them making a run for that wild card spot.
Feeling froggy?
He's feeling froggy with those teams. So, I don't know. Take that as what you will. I personally just think that, you know, I still like Pittsburgh a little bit better, oddly, even with whatever roulette of quarterbacks they have here. And now they're starting Duck Hodges on Sunday because, as Mike Tomlin said, he doesn't kill us, which is sort of a little bit of a
great quote.
A little bit of a shot there at Mason Rudolph, which really surprised me from
very interesting.
Know, like, when has he ever been down on a player like that before? Ever. I can't remember a time when he's always a players first, keep this in-house guy. And maybe he'll say that the comment was misinterpreted or whatever, but that to me seems a pretty direct
seems
and selective.
Succinct yeah. and to the point,
yeah.
yes.
I don't know. Very interesting to me. Very interesting. But speaking of our Gary Grambling's favorite Jets, the Jets have surged to a third consecutive win after just dismantling the Raiders on Sunday, 34-3. I was there. Really good watch there.
recommend you you know, go just, find that on Game Rewind. Yeah, yeah. Just soak it in.
DVR it and just
I mean,
go
that
back.
That game was a little stunning.
Totally stunning.
We both picked the Jets to win that game because we knew that this would be a bad one, 1 p.m. game for the Raiders on the East Coast. And we're just not necessarily, I mean, despite what we said in the pod last week, you know, I think we both kind of knew that there could be some stumbles in the Raiders' future.
After the game, Gruden kind of blaming the schedule a little bit, keeps mentioning all the big
keeps mentioning the league office having it out for them, hard knocks,
long airport,
schedules,
airplane trips.
Yeah.
Big flight here, big flight back, you know, says that a lot.
Pretty good impression. We should have made this a Jets topic. Well, Raiders topic. Jets Raiders topic.
Yeah, we can get to that a little bit later. But, you know, their crosstown rivals, the Jets, the Giants have slumped now to unseen lows. And locally, the talking heads have stopped talking about firing Adam Gase, and they're really talking about getting rid of Pat Shurmur, who's in his second year. Saquon Barkley seems to be regressing. Daniel Jones is turning the ball over at the rate of a young Eli Manning. The hot seat rankings are beginning to power up. Is Shurmur the name on the tip of everyone's tongue right now when it talks about coaches who might not be here next year?
I think he's the most obvious pick. I mean, there's a couple others we talked about. Jason Garrett obviously is swirling around, and then he's been linked with this Giants job if Shurmur does indeed lose his job. But the Giants are just totally rudderless right now.
Can we talk about the Garrett thing really quickly? Because we're going to have some Garrett-related topics later in the show, but specifically the report from NFL Network that we saw on Sunday that should Pat Shurmur go and should Jason Garrett get fired, it would be an obvious move for the Giants to, and it'd be something they'd be very interested in, mm-hmm. in going after Garrett. That sounds crazy to
me. It's so Giants, though.
It is.
It's like, you know, guy from the program, and they were interested in him reportedly a couple years ago if he had been let go then, which should tell you something if somebody is constantly being rumored to let go, be let go.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is what we talked about at the top of the show. It's like, find some fresh ideas.
Right,
it's
break
like,
out
God,
of.
My God, you know?
And this would be two straight hires they've struck out on.
The NFL feels like dating in a high school of 20 people, you know?
And I didn't date in high school, Connor, so I don't get the analogy.
But like,
you were a big dater, so.
I'm a big date guy. I like going on dates, you know? Any opportunity. Even for the disinterested parties, they would like a free dinner, you know? I'll pay for the dinner, you know, but it's like this constant rotation of like, okay, well, this didn't work out, so let's just go to candidate two and candidate three, and then we recycle them back, and then we, you know, Jason Garrett just doesn't do it for me. I don't know, that to me would be a very underwhelming hire, especially if I'm a guy who's trying to maximize the careers of Saquon Barkley, who is running out of prime athletic prime here as we speak. And I don't know. There's a lot of interesting things happening here, but they need to nail this hire. I mean, it's funny because they hate getting rid of coaches before the end of their contracts. I mean, it's something that bothers Mara to his core.
Right.
Firing Ben McAdoo in the middle of the season was an unthinkable thing for them to do at the time, and they might have to do something. They won't fire Pat in season, but I mean, this is two really quick hooks on guys, which is really against the Giants' MO.
They have to get it right because you have to make sure that if you think Daniel Jones is the guy, that you've got to get someone good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I just don't know who's out there. You know?
What about Greg Roman? He's a New Jersey guy.
Is he?
Yeah. Like Central Jersey, Atlantic City or something.
You know, when Jenny and I used to work at the Star Ledger, which is the paper of record for the state of New Jersey. You know, it wasn't like it is now, where no matter where you work at a newspaper, it seems like you don't care about where you are. You're just trying to go viral, you know, basically, and out of the news of your hometown. But back when we're covering the team and you go to cover the playoffs and the Super Bowl, do you remember just scouring rosters for people from New Jersey and just praying
totally.
You would get a hit?
Totally. Always.
Yeah, like constantly, you know.
Either a college in New Jersey or a hometown in New Jersey.
I remember I had to write, this was when I was there and you weren't there, so the Broncos-Seahawks Super Bowl was at MetLife Stadium, and I was writing like the Super Bowl game story. I was really excited about it. It was going to go on the front page of the paper, but on my way in, I was privately so nervous that the Broncos would win the Super Bowl because they had more people from New Jersey than the Seahawks. And I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to adequately
get all the Jersey people.
Get all the Jersey people. Yeah. The Seahawks, I think, was just one. Is my timeline right here that it would have been Dan Quinn? He would have been the defensive coordinator on the Super Bowl team in 2013?
Yeah.
Morristown, New Jersey.
Morristown, Dan Quinn. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Roman being a Jersey guy is probably still ingrained from my Star Ledger days. I probably just picked that up while I was there.
Yeah, you remember when we were covering the Jets together, like the Jets' assistant offensive line coach was from Englishtown, you know, or whatever. And you'll never forget that.
Right.
We have an encyclopedic knowledge of obscure Jersey.
And there are a lot of towns in Jersey.
There are a lot of towns in New Jersey. So what do we got for number four, because now starts, this is the Jason Garrett portion of the program.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Okay. After a horrifying fourth down decision on Sunday against the Patriots, the embattled Jason Garrett defended his refusal to use analytics by saying that some of the best decisions he's made in his career, he sure would have been panned by analytics, and that analytics themselves are just a historical average of what has and has not worked out. All I can say is yikes.
So I wrote that part for you. That's all I can say is yikes. You might have a different opinion.
No, yikes would be it. on the one hand, you have Harbaugh talking openly about, as you mentioned, a lot of coaches have robust analytics and don't talk about it at all. But mm-hmm. Harbaugh is one who's very successful and very respected and talks about it all the time. So if you're Jason Garrett and you're like, hey, I don't believe in analytics, but like, you know, Belichick's got his whole system hidden. And you know all Belichick disciples then create their own systems. And you know Harbaugh is talking about analytics all the time. Don't you think, like, wow, a lot of other smart coaches are doing this. Maybe I should update my opinion.
For those of you who missed it, 4th and 7 on, I think it was the 11-yard line, the Cowboys are down 13-6. And there's 6 minutes to play. They opt to kick the field goal to put the game within 4, which, again, doesn't change anything and doesn't put you within another field goal. And my main argument against this was that, you know, Jason Garrett can say what he wants about the analytics, but it's his entire mindset that doomed this process from the beginning, because he always views third down as the end of the road, right? And imagine if you at least had the open-mindedness enough to consider a fourth down, it can change the way you call plays on first, second, and third down, right? The only thing that was working for them on Sunday was Ezekiel Elliott. He was averaging like 4.5 yards a carry. On first down, you gain 3 yards on an option run, which the Patriots have had a little bit of a problem stopping this year. And then you throw 2 straight passes into the end zone because you're panicked about the situation and you know you're going to kick on fourth down. So to me, it's like, if you're more open-minded about it, maybe you run on second down and maybe you run on third down too, just to see what happens, because that is working for you.
It totally changes the math, Connor.
It changes the math. I don't know.
I agree.
You make a great point, because, like, if you're actually interested in keeping your job, right? Why wouldn't you act
you're doing everything.
Yeah.
You would want your owner to know that you're doing everything. Although his owner has backed him up and says that he also is not a big analytics guy.
It's very of the times right now, right? That it would almost be popular with a segment of the football loving society to say that I hate having more information, right? I mean, that's basically what you're saying. I hate having more informed decisions, making more informed decisions.
I'm trying to think of an analogy, but all the ones I can think of are just too nefarious with broader consequences than not making the fourth down or not trying for the fourth down.
Gut and momentum and all that stuff is still valid. And I think
not trying for the first down. I can't speak. Yeah. Just don't want people to think that I'm an idiot. Go ahead.
When we talk about analytical decision-making, it's not like we're saying that this should rule everything. Do you know how many times John Harbaugh probably tells the person in his ear to shut up and that he's going to do whatever he wants anyway? But I think it comes down to, there are 150 little moments in the game where sometimes that little like nudge just helps, you know, and it says, okay, this is, you know, 80% of the time this works, you should probably just do it.
Yeah, and Harbaugh's talked about that too, like sometimes in the flow of the game, or there's other factors you don't consider. But that's the whole point, is that it's not the end all be all. It's just one more piece of information. So if you're saying I'm not going to use analytics because I want to consider all these other factors, and the inverse of that is what you're going to consider all the other factors, but you don't want to consider the analytics factor, doesn't make any sense.
That's a great point. And owners are so, it's such a copycat league, right? And so if Baltimore ends up going to the Super Bowl or going deep into the playoffs, what is every owner without a robust analytics department going to do this season, offseason probably? Build out a robust analytics department, or at least talk to the other owners about building it out, or, you know, at least hear people out about building it out. So do you want to be the coach standing on the soapbox and saying that I think this is stupid? No.
I just had a really random flashback of being at the owners' meetings in Arizona and John Harbaugh in the lobby talking about how excited he was about Lamar Jackson that I just forgot about until now.
Huh. Set the scene for me.
Well, it was near that weird birdcage.
In the Biltmore?
In the Biltmore, yeah. That makes the whole lobby smell like bird. Bleep that out. Sorry. I mean, honestly, though, it's what a strange thing to have in a upscale hotel lobby. But I think he was talking about, I don't remember the specifics. I just remember the excitement, Connor. And at that point, I should have recognized it a little bit more and, you know, drafted him in our fantasy league like you did. Although I will say my team was auto-drafted, so I didn't actually choose my players.
But as is tradition, you and I tend to bring each other on staff. Every year, one of the two of us seems to have some level of success. Very rarely do both of us bottom out. More typically, you're at the top of the standings and I'm bottoming out.
You know,
and then
we are?
I beg to join your staff at the end of the year.
We're like Belichick and Saban. We don't win in the same year.
That's a good point. Classic.
Now, the analogy kind of goes off the rails because it's like I'm 2-9 right now, but we just don't win in the same year. We'll just leave it at that.
I guess I would consider you Belichick because I feel like Belichick is still a bigger deal than Saban, like in some level, right? Like not like, you know, just a bigger deal, you know?
I would argue that this has always been my argument. It's just that it's harder to have that sustained success in the NFL.
Yeah.
Where you don't recruit. That would be my argument.
And Jenny is the picture of sustained success. So there you go. Belichick.
Literally no one in my life thinks that, Connor, but thanks for being that friend.
You got it. Speaking of the Cowboys, a very long list of potential successors for Jason Garrett's job should he lose it was released by a Vegas odds maker. I tweeted that. You can find that on my Twitter. I think we'll have it posted for when the show airs. But the most likely scenario at 3-1, according to Vegas, is Urban Meyer, a disgraced former college football coach, and a bunch of other college names, Lincoln Riley, Matt Rhule, Chip Kelly, all on the list. Friend of the program, NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah, also tweeted to be on the lookout for Dan Mullen from Florida. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury's been adequate this year.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think we're in line for another college coach? I mean, this is just what Vegas is thinking about right now,
yeah.
Which is always kind of an interesting perspective to have on things. Do we think that another college coach is going to make their way into the league next year?
My thoughts are yes, because the hiring and firing cycle in the NFL has churned so many times the last few years that I think the ranks are somewhat depleted. So mm-hmm. I think it's only inevitable that we would have somebody make the jump from college because there aren't a ton of candidates right now.
Yeah, I would say Lincoln Riley to me sounds more likely. I think I would feel crazy about hiring Urban Meyer for an NFL job.
Oh,
at this
point. Yes, I agree with that.
I would feel totally. I would hire Chip Kelly again before I hired Urban Meyer.
You're a big Chip Kelly guy.
I'm a big Chip Kelly supporter.
I would not hire Urban though. I agree.
Yeah. Matt Rhule is. I mean, obviously,
Matt Rhule
got down the
State
aisle
College,
with the Jets.
High grad.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But yes, got very far with the Jets, and then they had the weird circumstance of wanting to pick his staff for him. But presumably there would be another team that would not make that same requirement. So he would have had the Jets job. So it stands to reason that he would have an opportunity again this year.
And
potentially.
Right in the backyard there. Wouldn't have to move very far in Texas. I don't know much about Texas geography, but maybe
feels
Baylor.
Like everything's kind of close, but also far. This is how I feel about Texas.
That's good. It's like a good saying to have on, like, you paint on like a rustic piece of driftwood. It's like Texas. everything seems so far, but it's really close.
Well, because, like, you can get between the cities, but it'll take a while.
Yes.
I mean, I guess that's true of anything. You can get there, but it might take a while.
When was the last time you were in Texas?
Don't have a clear memory of it. Maybe the Super Bowl Houston?
Interesting. I made, like, a first trip to Texas.
Oh, no, I just went to Austin, like, 2 weeks ago. Great. Really on the ball here. Go ahead, Connor. What was your last trip?
I agree with your perspective. I was there in September, and everything felt like a very small town and close together, and I went from town to town to get some barbecue, and it was, like, 40 minutes away, but it didn't feel 40 minutes
Yes,
away,
that's exactly how it is. So it's not really a bad analogy.
That's a good point. So... very fun part of the show here coming up. As you know, we make our predictions. We make our Vrentis consensus for the week. A lot to get excited about, but we're just going to take one quick break. All right. So loyal listeners of the show know that I came into this first season of the Weekside podcast with the thought that I was able to predict the future at a better rate than other people in society. This season has beaten me down significantly. It's been tough. I've searched for advice. I've Googled ways to more adequately predict the future. This is a serious thing that you can look up online. Last week's prediction, for those who listened to the show, is that the Packers were going to put up a 40 burger on the 49ers. I mean, that was it. I mean, that's probably as far away as we've been from what actually happened so far. That was a tough one.
You could have just said the wrong team. Maybe you meant that the 49ers were going to put
confusing
up...
confusing my psychic vibes.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, the information was almost there, but you just kind of misheard it. The wires got crossed a little, Connor.
I think maybe before New Year's we'll go back and we'll play all the oracles and we'll go... But I'm just thinking about them in my head, and it's been a rough... You know, it's been a rough go at it. Thanksgiving is coming up, so we want to keep the receipts on a prediction that I had that by Thanksgiving, Freddie Kitchens would abandon play calling duties as head coach of the Browns. That is also probably not going to happen, given that they're on a little bit of a winning streak here, and they just scored like 40 points against the Dolphins. But needless to say, we're going to move on. We're going to keep trying. Blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then.
Just so. All that matters is the trying.
So I'm going to give you some coaching change predictions coming up here, and I'm going to give you one wild card to see how you react to it, because this is my favorite thing. It's just to surprise you.
Oh, great.
So we talked about the Dallas Cowboys job. I think the Dallas Cowboys job will be open, right? The Giants job, I think, is pretty safe to say that job is going to open up. Atlanta, despite the fact that the players love Dan Quinn and they were on that nice little surge there, I think it's probably hard to reason with keeping him around, just kind of based on how everything's happened there. Jacksonville, I think, is another obvious candidate for a regime change. So here's my wild card. I think this is going to be interesting. The Bengals.
Whoa.
What do you think about that?
No. I have no poker face, Connor.
That's why I like to surprise you, because I know instantly whether or not you think it's good or not.
I would like to hear your reasoning.
Can I ask you a question first?
Yes.
When you're a little kid and you go to Christmas, and especially when you're around family and like your aunt or your uncle gives you a gift and you have to pretend to like it in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. Did you struggle with that when you were younger?
Well, I don't know how it was received. I certainly made my best effort to pretend that I liked the pink colored cashmere-ish sweater that was, 4 inches too short. But I don't know how the person on the other end felt about that, because they probably were... You know, if you're in that situation and you don't know if somebody likes your gift, you're not going to say, wow, I could tell that Jenny didn't like my gift.
I might have to do a little reporting on the show. I might dig into
dig into my past.
Yeah.
You could probably pretty easily figure this out.
I might, when you guys are sitting around Thanksgiving table, I might just do a little phone call. I might see Mr. and Mrs. Rentis, but they, you know, just what they think about it. I'd be curious. I always thought I was
excellent at it,
good at it, but when you see videos of it, like, it was clear that I was not. And I don't know if any kid really is.
I would
imagine
you would be pretty good at it because I feel like you're so earnest.
That's why I named my dog Ernest after me.
Right, exactly.
So here's my reasoning on the Bengals coaching job. I think that if you're the owner who let Marvin Lewis hang around for 20 years and you saw the good and the bad of that, they were not expecting to be winless this year. This was not a team that was built to tank, right? They kept AJ Green. They kept, you know, Tyler Eifert, all these guys around at the trade deadline because they thought there was something going here. I'd move then to go to Ryan Finley and then bench Ryan Finley again and reinsert Andy
Dalton.
Well,
I agree with you here. Yeah. It's and just I don't, no direction.
Yeah. I don't think that a coach would go back to Andy Dalton if he didn't at least, if the seat wasn't at least getting a little hot.
All right. That's a good argument, Connor.
Right?
You've opened my eyes a little bit. I'll give you that.
Because, you know, you're going to get the number one pick. So what has this guy shown you? And the Browns are, you know, entrenched in football. I mean, this is the Browns. I mean, you know, and so they're looking at it and saying, has this guy personally, who struggled to even find a defensive coordinator to take the job, you know, they had a really hard time filling out this staff. Is this the guy that's going to pick the quarterback for the next 10 years of the franchise at number one?
Coming around a little bit to it.
Yeah.
It's a good argument. Convincing Connor.
That's all I wanted to hear. How about our Rentis consensus? And as everybody knows, we like to close the show with just something that we can all agree on, something that we can all get behind. And we just have a lot of fighting, a lot of yelling in society today. So give us something to agree with as we head out.
This was something I said in the office about 30 years ago, or 30 minutes ago, rather.
Back when you started at SI in the 70s.
When I was a young child in the newsroom. 30 minutes ago, I just said, wow, the AFC is gross. And everyone seemed to agree, so I think that we've built consensus. But looking at the standings, Connor, it's pretty amazing.
How gross it is. What are the, like, you have the playoff odds up? Or the
the Bills at 8-3, as we discussed, not really a strong 8-3 there. Mm-hmm. Steelers at 6-5, and then the next four are the Raiders, Colts, Titans, and Browns. Ugh. Compared to the NFC, where your wild card positions are the Seahawks and the Vikings.
That's incredible.
That is incredible.
The NFC East is going to be the one outlier, right? You know, right. Whatever team sort of makes the Eagles or Dallas will get punched out right at the beginning, and then we'll have these Titans left, and I think that's really exciting. NFC playoffs are going to be fun to watch.
Absolutely, but the AFC playoffs will be gross. Well, at least the wild card spots. That's my consensus this week, Connor.
I think that's a great way to go out, you know?
Really?
Sometimes, you know, when's the last time, and you and I are different because we're friends, obviously, but I think that almost anybody listening can probably sit there and say, you know what, the AFC's gross.
Yeah, I definitely think so.
We're just bringing people together right before Thanksgiving. That's what we're doing. That's right.
Well, I don't have the credits. Sorry, hold on.
We'll just read the end credits, and then can you, like, bump it up right after this?
Okay. All right. I got him.
Got him?
Yep. I favorited it on my phone. Cool. So. All right, folks. Well, thanks for listening. Have a great Thanksgiving holiday. And the MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Rentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Murevich is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.